There's a new article called Make the Media Great Again, written by Steve Cortez. One of the things he says in that article is MAGA hats, that is, Make America Great Again hats, are not KKK hoods, and supporting America First policies does not equate to Nazism. It is imperative in these polarized times that the press regain trust by reining in systemic bias and reclaiming the honorable role of journalists as truth seekers first and foremost. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Steve Cortez, who wrote that, is our guest. He is a CNN political commentator. And I want to say, Steve, since the last time you and I have spoken on this radio program, you were making the rounds in a little clip where one of your colleagues at CNN was so rude as you were talking about problems of the border and, you know, crime and things like that. The lady actually started filing her nails like, you know, she did everything but yawn as you were waxing eloquent about real and present dangers. Tell us about that.
Right, Jerry. No, you know, it was really outrageous. And by the way, I wasn't just talking about problems at the border. I was specifically talking about, at that point, it was new news. Officer Singh in California, legal American immigrant, a father of a young child, a husband who was brutally killed in cold blood by an illegal immigrant who had already been convicted of previous crimes, who was allowed to stay in the so-called sanctuary state of California and took the life of a brave young officer and, again, a legal American immigrant. So I was talking about a dead cop killed by our misbegotten lax immigration policies. And Anna Navarro, who I was on with, had the gall to be so bored with this conversation and to show such disrespect, not just to me, but more importantly to this, to the memory of this slain officer and his family, that she began to file her nails to show how uninterested she was in whatever I had to say and whatever the president had to say about the border and the need to secure our country. So it was really, you know, outrageous behavior. Of course, I certainly said so at the time. I do think that she would, you know, unwittingly did me a bit of a favor, though, because boy, did that clip get a ton of attention, particularly all over conservative media and social media. And I think, you know, it was almost unanimous opinion out there of anybody, you know, any thinking person, that even if they agreed with her on policy, it was just incredibly rude tactics to use on air. But I think, unfortunately, Jerry, it is emblematic. While it's a terrible example and an extreme one, it's still emblematic of the way that that most pundits, most so-called journalists, and I say so-called because many of them claim to be journalists, but they're really not. They're opposition activists. But it's representative of the way they view our movement, the 2016 movement, the Trump movement, MAGA, whatever you want to call it, populism. They view us as people to be dismissed, people to be ostracized and not listened to. And part of that, and this is why I write about that in the article, is, you know, you would think things I say in there about a MAGA hat's not the same as a KKK hood. That should be self-evident, right? That should be obvious to anyone. But guess what? It isn't. I mean, you hear that all the time on cable TV news. And so I think it's important. One of the reasons I wrote this article was to try to take a very public stand. This is not okay. It's not good for our country. We have to move away from this. We need real journalism again.
Yeah. Well, we saw what happened, and in fact, you write about it, to the Covington Catholic students. It's an old story on the one hand, and on the other hand, the news media hasn't really done much in the wake of the major lawsuit that's down the horizon here with involving the Covington students because they were so maligned. It's a story that's not going to go away overnight.
Right. Well, and, you know, here we saw again the rush to judgment. And, you know, I write in the article there have been already, it's only middle of February, and in 2019 we've already had three major fake news stories. First was the BuzzFeed deception, really, that that supposedly the president directed his attorney, his then attorney Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress, that he suborned perjury, which would be a crime, that was totally discredited by the Mueller team very, very quickly, thankfully, but not so quickly that there hadn't already been just a torrent of news out of the media, you know, completely, basically indicting and convicting the president, at least in their minds. And then just days after that, really hours after that, came the Covington smear where these young people were just totally unfairly accused and mistreated when once all the facts came out, I think, if anything, they actually looked pretty darn honorable on the whole, you know, in the face of a lot of adults who were really provoking them in a lot of terrible ways. And then now the third example, I think, is this recent Jussie Smollett case in Chicago, where the media, and you know, what do all three have in common? The media will absolutely rush to judgment. It will forswear its normal historic role of fact-finding. It will put that aside as long as the purported story fits their preconceived narrative and makes Trump and his followers look bad. And particularly if it makes us look racist and retrograde, they will rush to judgment on that story. And again, whether the facts bear that out or not. And that's where I think it's really reached a level where it's really harmful to our country. I mean, this is a problem. We need, they call the press the fourth estate. We need the fourth estate to be healthy and robust. And they should be fact-finding, and they should be checking their personal biases at the door. Well, that's not happening anymore. And so we desperately need, I think, in this country, real journalists who have a healthy skepticism, who put fact-finding first, and leave the punditry to people like me. Now, I don't claim to be a journalist, Jerry. I'm a pundit. I have an agenda. So I'm clearly a supporter of the president. I worked on his campaign. I'm going to work on his reelection campaign. I'm a biased person, you know, but I admit that there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, pundits are supposed to have a point of view. I have a philosophical point of view, and that's fine. But what I'm trying to tell the so-called journalists is leave that to the pundit, to the pundits. We need actual journalists to be fact finders and storytellers rather than opposition advocates. And unfortunately, that's what almost all of media is today, on the side of the so-called resistance against the president.
Yeah, it's we could look at it this way. If somebody wears a MAGA hat, are they in truth more likely to be a victim of some sort of attack, or are they more likely, according to the media narrative, that is the mainstream media narrative, to be some sort of oppressor, some sort of bully? The answer is, according to the mainstream media, if they're wearing that hat, they're likened to the KKK, as you point out. There are actually all kinds of cases. I remember somebody even counted, they had more than 500 different cases where somebody wearing a MAGA hat was attacked, and some genuinely violently. In other cases, it was just as simple as somebody, an adult taking a Coca-Cola from, snatching it from a teenager's hands and then smashing it, sloshing it into the guy's face. And, that's what I think of your Make America Great Again hat or whatever. That's what I think of your Trump. But you yourself, I understand, when you visit your own hometown of Chicago, sometimes have some problems as a Trump supporter.
No, I do. And listen, and I don't want to, paint myself as a victim. I mean, I can certainly handle it. And I put myself out there in the public square in a very divisive political atmosphere. So that's a part of the cost of doing that is that, yeah, you deal with a lot of grief. But I live in Chicago, so it's not just my hometown growing up. I live in Chicago now. And I will tell you very often, I mean, I would say at least every couple of days, some complete stranger verbally confronts me. I've thankfully never dealt anything physical, but, verbally calls me a racist, calls me a Nazi, that Trump, bleep, something like that. So that's why, by the way, when this Jussie Smollett case broke and, he claimed that a couple of thugs in the middle of the night randomly said, this is MAGA country, my antenna immediately went up and said, wait a second. I mean, this is not MAGA country, Chicago. I will guarantee you that. That is not something that you are likely to hear. Now, on top of that, at 2 a.m. on an absolutely deserted street when the temperatures were absolutely frigid, 20 below wind chills that night, the whole story just reeked from the beginning.
Yeah.
But for me personally, the idea that random people would scream this is MAGA country, really just didn't meet the smell test, for me. And yeah, look, it's unfortunate, though, too, that I think in our society right now, because we are so polarized and divided, we're not having respectful disagreements. We're becoming very tribal instead in our disagreements. But I blame media for exacerbating that.
Yes,
Jerry, because again, if they were being honest arbiters and telling real stories, and by the way, there are negative stories out there about the president and his movement to tell. All right. I mean, for example, we don't have a wall built. We controlled Congress for 2 years, right? That's a very legitimate criticism of the president. Yeah. You could write stories that are not friendly to the president,
and
the Republican
Coulter
Party. Sure. And by the way, I'd agree with those stories. I would. All right. This has been so far a failure. I think there have been many successes in this administration, but that has clearly been a failure and a significant one, in my opinion. There are stories to write, and you can write that in an objective way. You should also be covering the successes, particularly when it comes to the economy, I believe. But instead, we don't see that. We don't see investigative journalism. You know, what we see again is opposition advocacy. And what I would challenge the viewers and the listeners, if they don't believe me, is go to the Twitter feeds of the people who are the White House correspondents. So the people in that briefing room, and I know many of them, and a lot of them, I have a good personal relationship with them. But I can tell you without, you know, any equivocation, they despise the president on a personal level, and philosophically, they completely oppose everything he has done. They are not reporters. Yeah. Now, they all claim to be reporters in that room. None of them would say I'm a pundit. They wouldn't say I'm like Cortez. I have a point of view. But they all do, or almost, I shouldn't say all, almost all of them do.
Sure.
And what I would challenge the listeners to do is go to the Twitter feeds of those people, the people you see asking questions in that press briefing room in the White House. Go to their Twitter feeds. It's actually kind of amazing to me how honest and transparent they are there about their biases and about their agenda. And you will quickly see that these people have a very overt agenda when it comes to Twitter, even though they'll then go on TV and claim to only be reporters, you know, rather than activists.
Yeah, it's become a very toxic environment. We have just a few minutes remaining. How about some comments about the border security, since that's such an important issue and the way the media covers it?
Right. Well, you know, and here again, if we're for border security, and this is a constant media narrative, you must somehow be racist, that, you know, you're against brown people. I keep hearing that phrase thrown around, that wording. That's ludicrous. First of all, as an Hispanic, I find that really insulting as a Hispanic American. And Hispanic Americans, by the way, are not soft on the border, contrary to, you know, the myth that's perpetuated by the media. You know, legal American citizens, whether they're native born or legal immigrants, actually are pretty unanimously, regardless of their background, pretty unanimously in agreement on being tough on the border. And, you know, and polling bears that out. Look, we have a terrible situation on our southern border, and we have for decades. I believe it's been an emergency basically since the 1980s. Since the 1986 amnesty, we've had more or less an open or at least a porous border, a very lawless region. It's terrible for Mexico. It's terrible for us. It's not good for our economic and national security. I give this president so much credit that he's the first real leader to confront this, because the Republicans had been almost as complicit as the Democrats, I think, in tolerating and even encouraging illegal immigration. This president was elected on a very different premise of saying, I'm going to protect the economic and national security rights of the United States first. I'm going to protect American workers and protect Americans' safety from dangerous illegal aliens. And he has taken this issue up both as a candidate, you know, and now as president. It's been a hard fight. He hasn't made as much progress as any of us would like, but I give him enormous credit for taking up this difficult fight. And I think, unfortunately, he had to declare emergency.
And how is Trump doing among the Hispanics as far as polling? This is a surprising story. You would not glean this from the mainstream media, apart from what you're about to say.
Not something they want to shout from the rooftops, but I sure will. So, yeah, he got 30% of the Hispanic vote in 2016, massively above where people thought. Now, I don't want to have a parade, Jerry, for winning a third, right? I want to do better than that. I want to win the Hispanic vote. I think he's got a chance at that. And polling's starting to show that. Recent opinion polls have showed him north of 40, even as high as 50% approval among Hispanics. So he is doing well. And I think the main reason, by the way, Hispanics are statistically the most entrepreneurial people in America. We are the most likely people to start new businesses of any demographic in America. That's something I'm really proud of. And this president has been amazing for small business, no matter what your color or background, of course. But Hispanics are benefiting more than most, you know, again, because we are so entrepreneurial. And he's created the conditions for small business to thrive by reducing the regulatory and tax burdens that we put upon small business. I think that's the main reason that there's a real energy among Hispanics. And by the way, Democrats, they won't talk about it much, but secretly they know this and they're worried about this, because in 2020, it's going to be crucial, particularly in critical states like Florida, which we won last time. And if this Hispanic support continues, I think we're going to win Florida handily in 2020, which makes the Democrats' path to victory extremely difficult if you put Florida into Trump's column.
Wow. Steve, thank you for your time. Steve Cortez's Twitter handle is at Cortez Steve, and Cortez is spelled C-O-R-T-E-S. Hey, thank you so much for being with us, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Jerry, thanks.